Good morning. I invite you to open your Bibles to the book of 3 John. 3 John. We're going to be studying from that book here a little bit this morning. It's good to see everybody. It seems like this year, when I have not been able to preach, it's been in bunches at a time, whether that's the birth of my son or the conjunction of a vacation and a gospel meeting. It's been some time since I've had an opportunity to stand in front of you and speak. And I want you to know how thankful I am for you all. It's so good to be back with you from our trip. It's been good to have a week of a gospel meeting. However, it won't last long. Next week, my wife and I, well, I don't know if my wife yet, I don't know if we've decided that far, but I will be gone in Crockett, Texas. We've got a gospel meeting up there that we're going to be engaged in with the brethren up there. I want you here Sunday, but I'd encourage you if you're in the area throughout the week to make that drive. It'd be good to see you, and I know the brethren there would appreciate that as well. The book of 3 John is the one I want to look at here with you this morning. A few weeks ago, we looked at the book of 2 John. And if you'll remember, that book of 2 John was written by a man who designated himself as the elder. And we deduced all those weeks ago that that elder was John, whose name is affixed to the book in our Bibles. And not just any John, but the Apostle John. And he calls himself the elder in such a way as to denote probably the idea of his age and his wisdom. And he's trying to get the reader to understand that they need to listen to him because he's got something pressing to say. Perhaps he's near the end of his life. Perhaps he realizes that his chances to write the things to people that they need to read are limited. And so he says, listen to me. I am wise. I'm old. I'm aged. And you should listen to my wisdom. That second book of John was written to the chosen lady and her children. And we described that as the local church there. The church is described in various other texts as the bride of Christ. So that kind of language is not unusual to describe a local church. And so we suggested that that book of 2 John was written to a local church there on that occasion. In this second epistle of John, in the letter, John encourages that local body of believers, that local church, to exemplify two qualities, truth and love. And those two qualities are intertwined in such a way that even though from our perspective, our human perspective, those things seem contrary to each other, you can't be loving and maintain truth, we would think. John says, no, these two ideas are really inseparable. They're intertwined. The truth demands that we love. If you really are abiding by the truth, John says, you will love. And if you really love, then you will hold to the truth and teach the truth. Well, John the elder wrote another brief letter we have in our Bibles as 3 John. And in this letter, John uses the same designation for himself. He describes himself as the elder, again, to signal his wisdom and his age. Again, John in his old age, perhaps anticipating his life's end, is writing about some of the most important themes that you could find in Scripture. This time, the recipient is not the chosen lady, however. This time, the recipient is not a local church, but it's an individual Christian. In fact, we're given his name. It's the elder to the beloved Gaius. And John simply says of Gaius that he loves him in truth. You see how those two themes pop up at the beginning of this book as well? That John loves Gaius in truth. These themes are the very same themes that are discussed in 2 John. The same two qualities, truth and love, are put right in our face here at the beginning of this third epistle of John as well. In 2 John, we learned that each local church needs to exemplify love and truth in the things that it does. I want to suggest to you that in this third epistle of John, what we learn is that each individual Christian needs to exemplify truth and love in the things that he or she does. That is to say, truth or love is not just a collective thing that we do, but it has to be borne out on the individual level as well. So I just want to take some time and explore this encouragement that John gives to Gaius here in 3 John. Read with me the text here in 3 John, beginning in verse 1. The elder, to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth, Beloved, I pray that in all respects you may prosper and be in good health, just as your soul prospers. For I was very glad when the brethren came and testified to your truth, that is, how you are walking in truth. I have no greater joy than this, to hear of my brethren walking in truth, to hear of my children walking in truth, rather. Beloved, you are acting faithfully in whatever you accomplish for the brethren, and especially when they are strangers. And they have testified to your love before the church. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God, for they went out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. Therefore, we ought to support such men, so that we may be fellow workers with the truth. There in those first eight verses, what we find that John speaks specifically to Gaius's character. In fact, what we find John doing is commending Gaius's character. And he commends him for these two qualities that John spent so much time talking about in 2 John, and the two qualities that we were introduced to there in verse 1. That is to say, Gaius is commended for his truth and love, for his stand for truth, and for his love for the brethren. Did you notice that in verses 2 through 4, 2, 3, and 4? That Gaius there is commended for his steadfast stand for the truth. You know, as is common in ancient letters, John informs Gaius at the beginning of this epistle that he's praying for him. We see that, for instance, in a lot of Paul's epistles. Paul will open his epistles with a prayer on behalf of his recipient, or in some way letting them know that they are constantly in his prayers. And John does the same thing here. Beloved, I pray that in all respects you may prosper and be in good health. I think it's interesting that what John's prayer is for Gaius is for his physical well-being. His physical well-being. That is to say that John prays for Gaius's health, his well-being, his prosperity. Those are great things to pray for. But I want you to notice this about John's prayer. John's prayer is that Gaius's physical prosperity would match his spiritual prosperity. He says, "Beloved, I pray that in all respects you may prosper and be in good health, just as your soul prospers." That is to say, John's hope for Gaius is that his physical prosperity would match his spiritual prosperity, that his physical health would match his spiritual health. What if we thought in these terms of ourselves and those around us? What if we prayed in these terms about our brethren, and our brethren prayed in these terms about us? Could somebody pray that prayer on your behalf and you be better off for it? I think this is interesting. Because what John does is he equates the spiritual well-being of Gaius and hopes that his physical well-being could catch up with him. I think sometimes we flip that on our heads. We are physically taken care of. We are well. And oftentimes it's our spiritual well-being that's dragging behind. Perhaps we ought to be more like Gaius and live our lives in such a way that we could have this prayed of us. How prosperous and healthy was Gaius spiritually? For John to pray that your physical well-being be matched with your spiritual well-being, that must mean that Gaius was pretty spiritually well off, that he was doing things well. And in fact, he was. In fact, in verse 3, the reason Paul can pray that is because in verse 3 he says, "I was very glad when the brethren came and testified to your truth," that is, how you are walking in truth. The reason John can pray so confidently about Gaius' spiritual well-being is that he has heard that he's spiritually well, that he's committed to the truth, that he's living by the truth. Brethren came and testified to John, and they told him about how he was walking in the truth. Here is a defining feature of Gaius' life. If you want to do like a character sketch of Gaius, here is a defining feature of Gaius' life. When strangers met him, people who had never had contact with him before, when strangers met him, they decide to tell other people about this about him, that he is walking in truth. Is that true of us? What do strangers notice about you when you're walking through Walmart? when you're walking through the, you know, the grocery store, or when you're going about your work and you're doing the things in your day-to-day life, when you're taking care of your kids or whatever it is, or maybe even when you're here and people come in the building who are visitors with us and maybe they don't know you. What do they see in your life? What is the thing that they would go back to their friends, their family, their loved ones and say about you, say about us? Well, Gaius's character was such that when people came and met him for the first time, they went back and said, I know one thing, that guy walks in the truth. He is committed to the truth. Is that true of us? John is thrilled at this. John is thrilled because there is no greater joy, he says, than to hear that someone you love is devoted to the truth in such a degree, to such a degree that people take notice. God help us to be devoted to the truth like Gaius, right? But then the second thing happens there in verse 5 through 8, where first John commends him for his truth, but then beginning in verse 5, he commends him for his love as well. Beloved, you are acting faithfully in whatever you accomplish for the brethren. And especially when they are strangers and they have testified your love before the church, you will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. For they went out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. Therefore, we ought to support such men so that we may be fellow workers with the truth. Gaius is commended not just for his stand for truth, for walking in the truth, but also for his abundant love. And you know that word love is not in that section. And yet the idea of the loving actions that Gaius does runs throughout that section. How is it that Gaius demonstrated this devotion to truth? How was it that Gaius showed these strangers that he really was walking in truth? Look at this. He says, beloved, you are acting faithfully. That is to say, you are acting as one devoted to truth. You are acting faithfully in whatever you accomplish for the brethren, and especially when they are strangers. See, Gaius' devotion to truth, Gaius' faithfulness, was evident through the love that he showed the brethren. Gaius is evidently, one, he's evidently received and cared for strangers, right? That's evident from the text because John says you've done a good job with that. And two, he's evidently sent them away in a manner worthy of God. And by doing this, he has supported their work in the kingdom, supported their work in evangelism and in spreading the gospel. By this text, we learn that Gaius did everything within his power to lovingly serve these servants of God as they worked. God help us to be as loving as Gaius. God help us to have this kind of abundant love in us like Gaius did. Let me make a couple of points here. I'm going to pause here in the text. I'm going to make a couple of observations that maybe could be applied more directly to us. First, let me reiterate a point that I made back when we were talking about 2 John all those weeks ago. And I want you to understand that although it's common in our world today to look at truth and love as sort of opposite sides of a spectrum, that is to say, you can love or you can hold the truth. You can't really have both. That's not what John teaches us. That's not what the Bible teaches us about these two concepts of truth and love. It is not truth or love. It is truth and love. These two realities are inseparably intertwined. Gaius had evidently interacted with these strangers who knew John. And when they reported back to John to talk about Gaius' stand for truth and love, that they talk about it almost synonymously. He walked in truth. Well, what does that mean? Well, he loved. That's what it means. There's synonyms in their vocabulary. Let me encourage you not to believe the lie that culture and society pushes on us, that truth and love are exclusive qualities, that to love someone means to reject the truth. Don't buy that. That to hold to the truth means that you don't love someone. Don't buy that. Don't buy into the society's cultural understanding of what truth and love are. Truth and love are byproducts of one another. That they work together in tandem. Let me encourage you also to take a minute here and think about what John did in this letter so far. This is really a great example for us. Look at what John did here. John had heard through the grapevine that Gaius was excelling in these characteristics, in these qualities. John had heard through the grapevine that Gaius was doing pretty well, maintaining the truth and abounding in love. So what does John do? John takes the time to sit down, write a letter, and thank Gaius for being a faithful to the truth, abounding in love Christian. Did you know that the greatest compliments anyone could ever receive are secondhand compliments? Did you know that? The greatest compliments that anyone could ever receive is a secondhand compliment. You know, it's always nice to have somebody come up to you and pat you on the back and tell you you've done something well, you've done a good job, you're doing things all right. That's great, and I would not discourage anyone from doing that. If you see somebody doing a good job at something, go tell them. But it is exponentially more powerful when someone comes up to you and says that somebody else told them that you were doing a good job. You ever notice that? I think we ought to be people who talk good about one another behind our backs. When you see somebody doing something good, don't be shy to tell other people. You know, that person's doing a really good job at that. Because just as deadly as talking evil behind someone's back is detrimental to someone's well-being, talking good behind someone's back can really build someone up. Think about it. These strangers didn't go to Gaius and say, "Gaius, you did a really great job." They went to John. They said, "John, he's doing a really good job." That gave John an opportunity to encourage Gaius. They gave John an opportunity to write a letter and say, "Gaius, I've heard that you're doing things right. Other people are talking about how much you're devoted to truth, how much you abound in love." Some of the most encouraging compliments are secondhand compliments. Don't be afraid to talk well of people behind their backs. In the second part of this short letter, in verses 9 through 12, John points to two examples of truth and love for Gaius to take note of. One of these examples is a good example, and one of them is not so great. Well, look at the text here again with me, beginning in verse 9. "I wrote something to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first among them, does not accept what we say. For this reason, unjustly accusing us with wicked words, for this reason, if I come, I will call attention to his deeds, which he does, unjustly accusing us with wicked words and not satisfied with this, he himself does not receive the brethren either, and he forbids those who desire to do so and puts them out of the church. Beloved, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. The one who does good is of God, the one who does evil has not seen God. Demetrius has received a good testimony from everyone and from the truth itself. And we add our testimony, and you know that our testimony is true." Here, two names come up, Diotrephes and Demetrius. In verse 9, John says, "I wrote something to the church." Now, what that something was, we don't really know. Perhaps that's the letter of 2 John, right? If 2 John was written to a local church, if that's who the chosen lady and her children are, maybe Gaius is a member of that church to which 2 John was written, and maybe that's the same theme, same concepts. Maybe John is writing this as a follow-up to that. Regardless, the point is not necessarily about what John wrote, but the point is really about the reaction of Diotrephes, who we learn in verse 9 did not accept what John wrote. Diotrephes, according to John's description, is the polar opposite of Gaius. He commends Gaius for his stand for truth and his walking in love, but now Diotrephes comes into view, and Diotrephes is nothing like that. Gaius walked in the apostolic truth. Gaius followed the teaching of John and walked in the truth. Diotrephes, we're told, refused to accept what John had written. Gaius gladly cared for the brethren, especially those who were strangers, and sent them on their way in a way worthy of God. Diotrephes kicks the brethren out of the church. There is nothing in the character of Diotrephes that is either loving or devoted to truth. John says, look at Diotrephes. Don't be Diotrephes. Don't follow his example. In fact, John says in verse 10, "I'm going to call attention to his deeds when I come." because this kind of work has to be stopped. Now, in case it's unclear exactly the point that Gaius should be taking away from this part of the letter, look at what Paul writes in verse 11. Beloved, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. The one who does good is of God, and the one who does evil has not seen God. Gaius, in case you're confused, don't be Diotrephes. Don't imitate what is evil. Instead, imitate what is good, which is where John goes. He gives another example, the example of Demetrius, as a man who is spoken well of. And not much is said about Demetrius in this letter, so we really don't have much to go on. But I'll tell you this much, probably the reason not much is said about Demetrius is because Gaius already knew. Gaius probably already knew about Demetrius and about the good things he did. John didn't have to say much. But we learn that people say good things about Demetrius, just as the travelers spoke well of Gaius to John. In fact, according to John, even the truth itself speaks well of Demetrius. Even John himself speaks well of Demetrius. That is to say, Demetrius has exhibited such a stand for the truth and such a love for the brethren that people who know him can't help but see these two qualities in his life. They can't help but see truth and love working in tandem in his life. Let me encourage you, as you look at this text and this section and these people, let me encourage you as Christians who are trying to grow in these qualities, and I hope that describes you. I hope that you see in your life room to improve in your stand for truth and in your demonstration of love towards others. Let me encourage you as you try to grow in these two qualities that one of the greatest things that you can do is to identify exemplary Christians. To identify people who exemplify truth and love in their life. Let me encourage you to look at the people around you. To look for people who stand for the truth and be like them. Let me encourage you to look for people who are abounding in love and be like them. Listen for the names of people either here or elsewhere who are always being praised for their commitment to truth and love. You hear those stories, right? You hear about people, maybe they're in our area, maybe they're not, who are devoted to truth, who overcome great obstacles and demonstrate great love throughout obey the truth and to be a part of the truth. Take note of those kinds of brethren who people speak well of. And imitate what is good, not what is evil. You'll find all kinds of examples if you look. Follow those good examples and be warned by those bad examples. John wraps up this short letter. He says, I had many things to write to you, but I'm not willing to write them to you with pen and ink, but I hope to see you shortly, and we will speak face to face. Peace be with you. The friends greet you. Greet the friends by name. So John writes to Gaius about truth and love. And Gaius has it. Gaius has this understanding of what truth and love is. People are talking about how great Gaius's truth and love is. And yet there's still much that Gaius can learn about holding to the truth. There's still much that Gaius can learn about demonstrating love. So John says, take note of Demetrius. Don't be like Diotrephes, but be like Demetrius. Take note of these two individuals. This ending in verse 13 and 14 is almost identical to the ending in 2 John as well. There's so many parallels between these two books. And he talks here about how he doesn't want to write certain things to him, but these things, the things about truth and love are so foundational, are so fundamental to the faith that he couldn't not write these things. He had to write them to him quickly. Don't underestimate how important these two concepts are. Don't underestimate how important it is to truly live and walk in truth and truly demonstrate love to those around you. These are fundamental concepts. If you have all the love in the world, but it is not based on truth, that's worthless. And conversely, if you stand firm in the truth, if you do everything by the book, but it is not producing love in your life, or it is not a product of love, it too is worthless. As far as John was concerned, other things could wait. I can talk to you about other things later on when we get to see each other face to face, but you need to make sure right now, and we need to make sure right now, that we are walking in truth and that we're acting in love. And if we can encourage anyone to that end tonight, this morning, or tonight, this morning, if we can encourage you in that, we want to do that. If we can help you come to know what the truth is and how to walk in it, we'd like to have an opportunity to do that. If we can encourage you to love the brethren more, we want to do that too. However we can help you spiritually, we want to do that right now. We're going to have an opportunity as we stand and as we sing a song of encouragement if you come and make your needs known.